You know how I know that you're gay?
How?
You like the movie Made in Manhattan?
You know I know you're gay?
How?
I saw you make a spinach dip in a loaf of sourdough bread once.
You know how I know that you're gay?
How?
You have a rainbow bumper sticker on your car that says, I love it when balls are in my face.
That's gay?
Well, hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Air Raid podcast, where we drop bombs of awesome into your ear holes. Thanks for joining us. I am your distinguished host, Aaron Roden. Thanks for downloading the show. You have a very nice iPod. We have a wonderful show planned for you today. Jeremy Kavner is here to engage in some amazing conversation with us about film racing. Yes. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello, Aaron. Glad
How's
to
going,
be here.
Buddy?
It's going great, man.
Good, good. I'm glad that you were into this and that you came out on a Tuesday evening. Special Tuesday evening.
Tuesday
episode.
Evening in sunny Seattle, and it's a pleasure to be on episode 4.
Nice. All right. Well, of course, I hope that all of you out there listening to this, which means now me and Jeremy and my wife, go and visit the website at air-raid.net. You can also follow us on Twitter. We have a Facebook page. You can email me at aaron@air-raid.net. So go forth, all ye who listen.
And tell all your friends.
And yes, tell all of your friends, Jeremy. So we got a great show lined up for you. Let's see, we have some news stories that I would love to get to here. Rush Limbaugh might in fact be a closeted gay. And then in news story number 2, Charlie Sheen is still Charlie Sheen. And of course we'll have some music to play for you. We got a couple tunes picked out. So Jeremy.
Yes, Aaron.
You just got back from Japan.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah?
It was a long time since I'd been there last, and I really needed a trip back. I basically just visited friends every night in Tokyo and stayed out late drinking and eating.
Nice.
Every
nice.
Night. Yeah.
So, okay. So I've been watching a lot of the Travel Channel lately.
Nice.
And there are, there is this show on there. There's this bald fat man restaurateur that goes to these weird locations and eats really, really strange food all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the places that he goes to is like, you know, over in Asia, Japan, China, Korea, a lot of weird food over there.
Yep, all the crazy Asian countries with their crazy Asian food, right?
You are such a racist. That was so
racist. I'm just putting the words in your mouth.
So what kind of crazy stuff did you eat over there?
Well, this last trip, I don't remember having anything crazy except lots of raw fish, you know. But that's not that popular.
Crazy.
That's popular these days. But
yeah.
When I was there for a year as an exchange student, I also had a part-time job teaching English. And at my going away party, they asked me if I wanted to eat some horse. So
some horse?
Yeah.
Really?
So I said, okay, sure.
Wait. This is. Okay. Keep
yeah,
going.
This
I'm
is
sorry.
Japan, and
all right.
So the horse came out, and it was raw horse.
Raw,
which I was not expecting. Which it was basically just like sashimi horse, you know. Instead of raw slices of fish, it was raw slices
oh
of
God.
Horse.
Really?
Yeah. And I guess I should have expected it, but I was not. I thought it was going to be fried horse.
Yeah. Something. Like deep fried, like
yeah.
It came from KFC or something.
At least cooked.
That is so weird. So did you eat it?
I did.
What did it taste like?
I don't remember much detail, but it just seemed to be kind of a rich meat that was raw, like a fatty tuna.
Really?
Not the normal tuna, but the extra fatty tuna.
So it wasn't chewy.
No.
It just kind of melted in your mouth.
Yeah, it did.
So now you're like this horse connoisseur.
Yeah. And
the like, weird, now you can't go back to eating just regular burgers. You need like a horse patty on there.
A horse, you know, ostrich burgers, buffalo burgers, cow burgers. They're all things of the past. I got to go horse from now on.
That's great. Well, I found myself every time I watch these shows on the Travel Channel, because we don't have like souped up cable, so we can't watch the normal like Food Network. But, you know, all those shows where they're just traveling and eating, like Anthony Bourdain and, you know, all those guys, you know, it just makes you so hungry and it makes you crave the weirdest things. So lately I've been on this kick, like I really am, I'm just always craving like dim sum, you know, just like the weirdest stuff that you can get at a dim sum restaurant. And so we went a couple, maybe a month ago or so with a group of friends, and the lady brought out pork lips. Excellent lips.
And you were like, I've kissed a pig before. I can do this.
I can eat its lips. And they were so good. They were so good.
Huh.
A little bony.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had some weird little bones in it. I didn't like look at the bones because they could have been teeth. So I don't know.
Do you think it was bones or was it some kind of cartilage?
No, it was bone.
In the lips.
Well, they probably took the whole jaw.
Oh.
You know?
Kind of grinded it?
Ground up? This is a great way to start episode 4, isn't it? This is disgusting.
People are either, you know, drooling because their mouths are watering or they're throwing up.
Right, right.
Never downloading again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Thanks for being the fourth episode and the last episode. Wonderful.
It's awesome.
All right. Well, let's get to our first headline here. And we're going to play this new sound drop. I hope all of you recognize it. All right. So did you recognize that?
I did.
Come on.
I don't remember from where.
Current Affair.
All right.
So proud of myself for finding that. Okay. So big, huge story here that a lot of people have probably heard already. So Rush Limbaugh, an anti-gay... This is, okay, I wrote this headline. Here we go. Anti-gay preacher marries anti-gay talk show host with a flamboyantly gay man playing a piano. So this was Rush Limbaugh's wedding, I think, last weekend. So have you heard this? He hired Elton John to play piano.
Really?
At his wedding. Okay. So
and
Rush
he married
Limbaugh.
A man.
No. Probably.
I guess I got confused.
I think he's closeted. But okay. So he married his fourth wife. I don't know her name. I didn't
fourth
even bother
one's
to
the charm, just
yeah,
like this
totally,
episode.
Totally, right? People are dropping like flies around here. So married his fourth wife. He had Elton John play music at his wedding. And then he got a very avid Uber anti-gay rights preacher or pastor, Ken Hutcherson, here from Seattle.
Oh, yeah?
Right. To conduct the ceremony. This just strikes me as crazy. Because, you know, Rush Limbaugh, first of all, is very anti-gay rights. Why would Elton John be into this?
And why would Rush Limbaugh be into Elton John?
Right, right.
Well, I think it's simple. gays don't, you know, gays don't have the right to marry, but conservative radio talk show hosts have the right to listen to gays play music. It's really quite simple.
I guess that makes sense. Wow, let's just move on. No, this just drives me crazy. Of course, Hutcherson is a pastor at a local church here in the Seattle area. It's actually in Kirkland, Washington. It's Antioch Bible Church, where he's been since, I believe, 1985 or something like that. But Rush Limbaugh has been, you know, just railing against gay rights for the longest time. You know, Elton John's had the same partner for a while, I think.
I'm just shocked in both directions because I don't see why Rush Limbaugh was interested in Elton John and why Elton John would play for Rush Limbaugh.
Well, apparently Rush Limbaugh has terrible taste in music. I shouldn't have said
well,
that. Oh, man, that was going too far.
Well, you know, half of his taste is all right.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, this just kind of goes along with how much of a showman this guy is. You know, Rush Limbaugh, I kind of doubt that he feels the way that he talks on, you know, on some subjects.
Yeah, I could understand that because, you know,
I think he markets himself like
exaggerating one side or the other.
Right, he
being on one side usually, but I mean, I see myself doing that too. I feel sometimes I can argue either side of an issue. If someone's taking the extreme on either side, I find myself kind of just taking the other side because I like to argue.
Right. Oh,
but
totally.
Another thought I had is that maybe Elton John just thinks he can turn people by, you know, performing for him. He also did that duet with Eminem, who's
That's
a big
right.
flaming homo, right? I mean, not
wow.
homophobe is what
wow.
I meant to say.
Okay.
Which are sometimes.
Is he though?
They're sometimes the same
one?
Thing, though, right? Homo,
right.
homophobe.
Yeah, that's true.
Same
that's
thing.
True. See, and that's what I think is going on here. I think Rush Limbaugh is a closeted gay man, and I think he hides it behind, you know, this is his fourth marriage.
Yeah.
The guy just wants some, you know, deep dicking. I think that's what's going on.
That's
here.
The official term for kind of straightening out sexuality.
No, I think that's it, man. Who is that guy, the televangelist?
You can't quiz me on pop culture, Aaron.
Oh, what's his name? You all know who I'm talking about, but he was caught like doing meth and having sex with a male prostitute or something like that.
Story sounds familiar.
I think his name's like Fred Durst or something like that.
Well, I know who Fred Durst actually is, though.
Yeah, I know.
So his name might be different.
Yeah, the same person. Same person.
Same person.
Yeah. They were both lead singer of some crappy rap rock band. But, you know, and, you know, he railed against homosexuality for the longest time, and then it turns out that, you know, he's gay. Of course, he's still hiding it.
Yeah, but he's railing against homosexuality in another sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could put it that way. Yeah.
Depends on if he's a top or a bottom.
that's true. That's true. This stuff just drives me crazy. And you know, everybody is just kind of railing against Elton John right now. It sounds like the gay community is really kind of up in arms about it because he would just even do it, you know. But the guy was offered like over $1 million to do this wedding.
Elton John was.
Right. And he's had such financial issues in the past, too. I mean, he's probably got a huge sunglasses collection, you know.
Yeah, those cost a lot too.
Well, and when they're encrusted in diamonds
and designer brands,
yeah, like Ray-Bans.
Mm-hmm.
Ray-Bans, yeah.
Dolce and someone else. Let's not promote too
Gucci.
Much.
Yeah. I hope I get in trouble for having their names on my show.
Hopefully,
or maybe they'll become a sponsor.
Checks. Yeah.
Yeah, AirRaid.net sponsored by Gucci. We have our own handbag. That just drives me nuts. That stuff just drives me crazy. So let's move on. Let's move on to our second news story.
Next news story.
Okay. We'll get this going here. All right. So second story here, second headline, big news. Charlie Sheen apparently is still acting like Charlie Sheen, people. Sheen's car was found at the bottom of a cliff off of Mulholland Drive in Hollywood, California.
Hmm.
Yeah. Curious.
Just hanging out, just
yeah,
chilling
just
there
out.
At the bottom of a cliff.
He wasn't there, of course. So this makes two times this year.
Wow. That's
the second time that his car has been found at the bottom of a cliff.
So he just drives up to the bottom of cliffs and parks it.
And then just pushes it over. I couldn't find out what type of cars this were. But this is two times this year. That's
so the cars.
We're only 6 months into this year, people.
That's once a quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, if he could get paid for this, it'd be a profitable business. Mm-hmm. But so these cars are actually going off the cliffs.
They're going off the cliff.
Without him in them?
That's
apparently
what I read. Yeah. Yeah. I read it. Well, maybe he went off the cliff also.
How high are these cliffs?
Or jumped out of the car. I don't know. I have no idea. I found this story on Gawker.com.
Hmm.
Gawker.com, and this story was written by Brian Moylan.
Let's get Brian on the phone.
Yeah, maybe I should give him a call. We are
got
very
unanswered
close
questions.
Friends.
Yeah.
God, I mean, this guy's got to get his shit together.
So, is there more to this breaking news story?
No, not really.
More details.
You know, I just don't know. Maybe he just doesn't know you can sell your used cars on Craigslist. You know,
it's possibly.
Yeah.
Possible. You know. Does he know how to use the internet?
right. Well, that was Craigslist's slogan for a while. You don't have to drive your cars off cliffs anymore. You can sell them on the internet.
Craigslist.
It's not just for stupid people.
Maybe he thinks he can claim insurance on these for being stolen, and he just doesn't understand how the Department of Licensing and Registration works.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, on the first, it sounds like when I read this article, it sounded like on the first car that they found kind of at the bottom.
Yeah, just kind of at the bottom of a cliff.
Right. He said that the car was stolen and, you know, that the problem was that he keeps leaving his keys in his cars.
Mm. He's just a trusting guy.
I guess so. You know,
the real problem. He's got a heart.
Yeah,
just doesn't think people would do him wrong.
Right. You gotta think though that Charlie Sheen probably lives in a pretty nice neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Probably a neighborhood that might even have a gate there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm guessing that there's not a whole lot of robbery and theft that goes on in Charlie Sheen's neighborhood.
Right.
You know.
And it's probably a neighborhood where people all have cars, so they don't just take other people's cars.
Most neighborhoods are, yeah. Oh, yeah. It probably is that kind of neighborhood, isn't it? Yeah.
So they just freely leave their keys in their cars.
For their neighbors
it's
to
convenient.
Borrow sometimes.
Yeah, it's like a flex car program without all the fees.
A rich guy flex car. Yeah, I wonder what cars he had go off the cliff there.
Yeah.
They must have been pretty nice. I mean, this guy's got some cash, right?
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah. I mean, if it was me, you know, I might do the same thing, actually, if I knew that I had a hand in creating something like the TV show Two and a Half Men.
I'd stay in the car if that was the case.
Yeah, except I would still stay in the car and just, you know, I'd be going like 120 miles an hour and yell sorry to the world as I plummeted to my death.
I do not comprehend how that show is popular and still on the air.
I can't figure it out. And now it's syndicated too. You know, so the reruns are just on every frickin' channel.
Every hour of the day.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't like fat people, and that show has a fat little person.
Childhood fat people. Obesity, man.
We shouldn't be promoting child obesity. It's not okay. It's not acceptable.
Right, and it's used as a comedy engine in
comedy
that
sometimes.
Show, too, because they're always making fun of them.
Low self-esteem and flabbery is being used as an agent to produce comedy in this show. And everything that goes on TV is, you know, then accepted, and it should not be acceptable to be an obese child or obese adult.
Wow, Jeremy. So are you
I'm anti-fatty.
Anti-fatty. Okay. Okay. I mean, we're learning a lot about you here, buddy.
Well, you know, it's all true.
So what happened in your childhood to make you so anti-fatty?
No, this is just a little tangent I'm on these days, you know.
Just one of those things that you just pick up. Huh?
I'm pretty accepting of people, you know, and I tend to be friendly to most people, but I just don't like fatties and fugglies.
You don't like fugglies either?
No, that's where I draw the line.
Wow, wow.
Yeah.
So, okay then.
But this other day, there's this kind of unattractive girl in our group, and so I wrote her off right off the bat. Mm-hmm. But then I kind of got to know her, and she had a cool personality, so I wound up liking her.
Yeah, now she's your wife.
No, I need to get to know her a little bit better, and she needs to lose a few pounds first.
Oh, man. You've heard that song, right? If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, get an ugly girl to be your wife.
I've not heard that song.
You've never heard that song?
Sounds like a funny song.
It's a great song. And probably for the most part it's true.
Do you think I could be happy for the rest of my life with an ugly wife?
I think you'd be more like self-loathing if you did that. Just from talking to you right now.
Yeah.
I think you might have a problem with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interpersonal conflicts get in the way of my satisfaction and happiness. Because I could see how this could work for some people, you know. She's ugly, so she's not going to leave the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, love and support forever. A companion that won't leave you, you know, that you can depend on.
Right.
Because she doesn't have other options.
Oh, man. So let me ask you this. So what do you consider fat, I guess?
I'm making myself sound bad now.
You are, actually.
But I'm really a nice guy. It's all for comedic effect.
Okay, good. Because I'm kind of a husky guy.
Yeah,
man.
I got
a little bit.
I'm overweight too.
You're no Slim Jim over
there.
No,
but we can kind of suck in and hide it.
I do a lot of sucking in.
Yeah.
And you know, for the years that I've been sucking it in, you'd think that I'd have like the hardest rock abs ever.
Yeah.
You know? Because I'm constantly using those muscles to hold it in. And it's like,
yeah.
You know,
I
don't.
You.
It still
I
just
feel
is, just keeps on getting bigger and bigger.
Yep. Well,
I can't figure it out.
Actually, I'm a little disgusted with myself. So that's what this.
So it is
this,
self.
It's
so
all
you're
self,
self.
Yeah. It's
self-loving.
It's all outward projection of self hate.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah.
You should all
yeah.
feel sorry for me. I got 15 pounds. I need to get rid of.
Wow.
Maybe 20.
Yeah, I'm looking at like 20, maybe 25.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm starting to get up there a little bit. I need to rein it in.
I'm just really
like
tired
Will
of
Smith and his kids.
Yeah,
need to rein that shit in.
I'm just tired of having to suck in, you know, and I can't.
You just want to be able to just let it hang.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because this is a huge problem for me. Because like you go to a barbecue or something like that. You know,
yeah.
I went to this barbecue last weekend. It was for my friend Elaine's birthday and graduation,
mm-hmm.
and congratulations, Elaine, if you're listening to
yes,
this.
Yes, congratulations.
And so I'm sucking it in, right, because I'm wearing – like I haven't bought a T-shirt in probably around like 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And so all my T-shirts are kind of
– They fit you 7 years ago.
They fit me 7 years ago,
right.
Yeah. So I have to suck in extra hard sometimes, you know, not drink any water. You know, for the whole day, I can't eat anything, and then I'll be super comfortable. But, you know, you go to a barbecue, you have a couple hot dogs and a couple cookies and some chips and stuff, and then it gets a lot harder to hold it in, you know. And so I always end up super uncomfortable at these barbecues because I'm so focused on holding my stomach.
I hate that. I hate that feeling. It makes me feel like a woman, like I'm bloated or something.
Oh, so now you hate women too. Because they're always bloated. Wow. We're getting into a hole. Oh, boy.
Yeah, so.
Episode 4. Things are just falling apart here.
I'm sorry. I thought I was on a different podcast.
Yeah. It was the racist, sexist network.
Well,
Rush Limbaugh's podcast.
Yeah. No, I hear women say, you know, they feel bloated, and I don't even know what it means, but I feel like that's how I feel now.
That's how you feel now. Yeah. Right now?
Well, no, I'm having a good day.
Okay, good.
You know, just
you
like
didn't even, you didn't eat
this
any
is a
big
this is a good
today,
stomach day. Sometimes you have good hair days, bad hair days. You know.
Yeah.
Other times there's bad stomach days where you just you put that shirt on and it's not comfortable. You're not feeling it.
Right. Right.
You
so you got
to take it off.
Put a sweatshirt on.
Yep. Put on a bigger option.
Yeah. Wrap yourself in plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give the
sweat
stomach muscles a little break. Just wrap it in the plastic to kind of tighten things up.
Suck it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm feeling you here.
Yeah.
I'm feeling you here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, back to cars.
Yeah.
Because I was riding the bus. I take the bus to and from work across one of the two main bridges here in Seattle.
Yep.
And as we're coming back into Seattle near Montlake, which is near the U District, right?
Yep.
South of U District. These two very brand new, very brightly colored Lamborghinis pass
nice.
The bus.
As they should.
Like, as they should, yes. Pass the bus and get off at the, excuse me, the Montlake exit there.
Hmm.
And who is driving the bright orange Lamborghini but Mr. Sir Mix-a-Lot himself?
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Now, this is like the fourth time that I've seen a Lamborghini in Seattle, and every time I see it, it's Sir Mix-a-Lot in the driver's seat.
And they're different colors each time.
They're different colors each time.
Well, I've seen an orange Lamborghini a couple times lately, too.
Yeah. Did it have, like, black trim on it?
I don't remember the trim.
This one was, like, orange and black, like the, yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't know much about cars, but it was a very low profile, you know, car. And yeah, so that's like the fourth or fifth time I've seen Sir Mix-a-Lot, and he's always been in his Lambo, one of his Lambos.
I'm glad because it's been a lot of years since he's had a hit, and it makes me happy to know that he still has enough fortune around,
dude,
to still have a Lamborghini.
He is. He's got to be collecting a ton of money. I mean, you know. Every time one of those songs gets played for, you know, whatever, commercial, whatever, you know, he gets a cut of that.
Right.
Don't you think?
Yeah, well, to a degree. I don't know how it all works, you know, because there's music licensing for radio and whatnot where it's all just covered. You know, they have like an ASCAP license or whatever it is.
Right, right.
At the club.
BMI license.
Yeah, and they just play the music. And I don't, you know, they don't keep track of every single play of every single song. I'm sure for ads and stuff, there's royalties involved.
Well, think of it, too. I mean, you know, we're not just talking about Washington, either. We're talking about the entire world.
Right.
You know, where you can find his music.
Right.
You know, Big Butts was a, or whatever it was, Baby Got Back.
Yep.
You know, that was a very, very popular song. It still is.
Right.
It still is. You hear it all the time.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I've heard it twice this week.
And
that
you have?
And that was just today.
Was it coming out of an orange Lamborghini?
No.
Was he listening to his own music as he's driving down the highway?
No. It was once on my way to work and then once on my way home from work.
On your iPod?
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've been talking about music, I think we're going to take a little musical break. We're at the halfway point of the show here, and we're going to hear Help I'm Alive by Metric. So enjoy that, and we'll be back with you here in a bit.
They're gonna
Hello, we're back with Jeremy Kavner, two-time world champion of film racing.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
So why don't you tell us about this a little bit, because I'm, you know, I didn't prepare all that well for this show, and I apologize for that. One to you, Mr. Guest, and the second to the listeners who are listening to this right now and going, oh, my God, this sounds like crap. But, okay.
Film racing, yes.
Right, film racing. So why don't you tell us about film racing a little bit?
Basically, you're given a set time limit, a defined or finite amount of time to do everything for making a short film. And that means creating the idea, brainstorming, picking your story, writing your story, doing all the filming for it, editing it, any original music you might or might not have time for, or just choosing pre-recorded music that you have the rights for, and or that's you know, doesn't have royalties or whatnot.
Right, right.
And finishing the product and burning it to a DVD, basically, and turning it in. And when we did film races, it was a 24-hour film race was the first one.
Uh-huh.
And then we did a 48-hour film race and then a couple 72-hour film races. So given only a day, 2 days, or 3 days, maybe you have to do all of the above from start to finish producing a short film. So it's pretty awesome. It's pretty exhausting. And it's also really rewarding when you come away with a finished product and you're just like, wow, we just did that. You know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say that Mairead and I, we recently went to the SIFF Film Festival, which is here in Seattle.
Which is pretty popular, pretty big.
Very, very popular film festival. Very long.
Yeah.
It goes on for a really long time.
Like 3 years at a time.
Yeah. It actually probably does. I don't know. I didn't remember that this one even started or the last one ended. But we usually really like to go and see the film shorts.
Yeah.
And during these film shorts, they show a number of them, like six, seven, and then you vote on your favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
This year, super, super disappointed with every short that we saw. It was terrible.
Tragedy.
And then we went online that night, actually, because we got a Facebook message from you, good sir.
Good timing.
Saying that, hey, you should check out some of these film races that I've done and have won awards on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did, and we were super impressed. And I mean, they were great. They were so much better than any of these shorts that we saw that we had just seen that day at Seattle International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ones that we saw was Meeting Miss Fortune, which was great. That was the first one, right?
Yeah, that was the first. And that was done by my friend June Chang. And I was just one of many who helped on it. And it's an interesting story. That was basically my start. And we did really well. And we wound up winning. We were the Seattle winners for the film racing 24-hour film racing contest, and that's something that's organized by a group in New York, and it goes on in different cities throughout the year, and we were the Seattle winners in 2009, so
congratulations.
That was pretty awesome.
Congratulations.
We were kind of the rookies, and we just wound up having a story that people really enjoyed, so we were pretty surprised when we wound up doing as well as we did, but then we were totally psyched and inspired to continue. And right after that, you know, our next project was a 48-hour film race, so we did it again, kind of just riding that wave of energy from the results of our first project. We kept the team going into another project about a month and a half later. And so
that's awesome. And then what was the title of the next one that you guys did?
The second one was for the 48-hour film project, which is another contest run by different organizers, and the title was the Belgian Pretzel. And have you seen that one?
No, I have not watched that one yet, but I remember you emailing me about it.
Yeah, and that's...
So, sorry.
Well, you know, we'll have links and URLs, and you and everyone else can watch all these great movies. And the Belgian Pretzel also was the Seattle City winner for that contest as well.
Oh, okay.
Which was pretty amazing to do it twice. And then... you know, this year again for the 24-hour contest, my friend June was busy with some bigger projects, so he's not doing the contest this year. So I started talking to some of my friends because I had such a great experience. I wanted to do them again, and I did not want to let them go by without being involved somehow. So we actually wound up getting together to kind of create a new team and a small team for the 24-hour film race this year, and when we wound up doing pretty well again, it was kind of a surprise because we were a new team, and it was pretty simple, but the story, I guess, was amusing, and we told it well. We kept it simple, and that keeps it easier to do well sometimes. We were the audience choice for these contests. All of the films that are done are screened locally at a Seattle theater. So
right, and then they're voted on by the audience.
Right. So the audience is a lot of people that were involved in the other films and friends of those people, and maybe some more of the public that heard, you know, and saw some of the advertising and came to the event. But we wound up being chosen by the audience as the best film at the screening, which was, again, totally awesome, because for me, being involved in the project last year with June and then again this year, to come back and do so well a second year in a row was again inspiring. And we were really psyched just with the results of it. So
that's great.
And again, that's just part of the reward you feel for it, because no matter how you do in the official results or awards, the fact that you get together with your friends and in 24 hours, start to finish, walk away with a short film is really rewarding, because you've got something to show for and something that you've done. So it's pretty awesome.
And in that small amount of time, you guys have done, you know, the taping of it, you've done the casting, you've done the script, and the editing, the music, everything.
And
that's amazing.
For me, I had an interest in editing, like digital editing, for a long time, and I never really did much of it because that was my main interest, was the editing. I didn't have story ideas, and I didn't have enough motivation or drive, I guess, to organize a whole project to put together the actors and the story and the filming, and it seems kind of overwhelming. And the awesome thing from the beginning of my experience, you know, my friend June just organized this kind of event to get friends together and do this contest the first time. So for me, because of my background interest, I saw that as a chance to just show up for 24 hours, which is a really small commitment, and then have something to show for it. So it's amazing on both sides, the fact that you're able to actually go through all the steps in such a short amount of time, but then also that there's a freedom in that because it's such a small commitment. It's only 1 day or 2 days.
Yeah.
And if you involve yourself in one of these projects, then it's a good way, I think, to just kind of get started in the process and learn what's involved with a minimal commitment and then yet have something awesome at the end of it.
Yeah. So, what's the time length of is there a minimum time length for the actual film itself?
Yeah, for the 24-hour race is the maximum time was 3.5 minutes, and I think I actually don't remember if there's a minimum. Might be.
So you can actually be you can be shorter than
If there's a minimum, it might be 2 minutes, but I don't remember clearly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you guys, let's see, wasn't Meeting Miss Fortune was like, what, 3 minutes and 24 seconds or something like that?
Yep.
And it just turned out great.
Thank you.
It was like the best 3 minutes and 24 seconds of my life.
Well, that's awesome, but, you know, your wife might be mad because wasn't your honeymoon good, too?
Yeah, that was about 3 minutes and 24 seconds, too, actually.
And it was just a close second to Meeting Miss Fortune.
Right. Oh, man, I hope she doesn't listen to that. Okay, so the other one that we watched was Never Been Used, and this is the latest one that you guys did. This was 2010.
Yeah, that's our 24-hour film race contest entry for this year.
Right, and winner.
Well, it was audience choice, and then based on the judges' decision, we got second place for the Seattle contest this year.
Okay.
And we also got best direction and best leading actor.
Which was you.
It was.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Nice.
Oh, my God. So what kind of award do you win for that?
Nothing really, except, you know,
they don't give you anything.
No, but just unless I've forgotten. But I checked recently just to make sure. But basically pride.
You
get pride and bragging rights.
Yeah,
but if you are the city winner, then at the end of the year, all of the city winners are judged. And basically all receive a prize depending on where they fall. And first place is something like $3,500. But
wow.
Yeah, which is awesome. You can put that into your next project.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, for Seattle, if you don't get first place, it's pretty much just you win all the fun and pride of being successful in completing the project.
Right. Right.
Yep.
So that's actually something I didn't think about. So what's the budget like for one of these?
Well, as cheap as possible.
Right, yeah.
And to start out with, you know, we just kind of did it on a whim. At least June signed up because he had an interest in, you know, filming and editing. And
did he have the equipment before
he
guys
had,
entered this contest?
Well, the interesting thing is we shot that first one with a Nikon D90 digital SLR camera.
Oh, okay.
Not even a real video camera, but a camera with a video mode. But it's a great camera with great lenses, so you can do some great cinematography.
Right.
It has some challenges because the zooming is manual and it's a little different, you know, just handling one of those cameras and doing it well, but it also gives you some advantages for some creative cinematography and style. So he had that camera, and that's basically all you need to start. You know, anyone can start with like a $300 video camera from the local store and put this stuff together if you get basic video editing software. And you might spend some money on some props, just depending on what you want for your story and film. Mm-hmm. But you also register for the contest, and that's about $130.
Okay.
So start at about $130, maybe a few food items for the crew to munch on during the day, and people just kind of, I think, support themselves for the day. You know, if someone wants a coffee, maybe they get a coffee and you know
you buck up and get it yourself.
You try to keep it cheap, but then in other circumstances with some of our projects, you know, we had some people contributing and we had some good craft services and food just sort of provided by people that wanted to help with the project, and they did it out of their own pocket. So I think in the films we did this year, we spent about $250 on each film, including the $150 registration fees we paid, plus the equipment we already owned. So
wow.
You know, you can try to keep it as cheap as possible, but if you want to spend more money on it, you're welcome to do that too.
Now, the two films that I have seen have both been silent. That's Meeting Miss Fortune and Never Been Used.
Yeah.
There's no talking in these at all.
And that's kind of funny.
Has that been like the Belgian pretzel?
No, these are the only two that have no talking.
Oh, really?
You know, last year I helped my friend June with four of them, and he made about seven short films. And then this year, with the friends I put together for a new team, we made two. Mm-hmm. The first one without dialogue and the second one with dialogue. But the two you've seen are the only two that don't have dialogue. And it's funny because Meeting Misfortune had a script and it had dialogue, but we were recording the audio on a different device because okay. we were filming with the digital SLR camera.
Right, right.
And we wound up not being able to get the audio off of our equipment for editing.
Oh.
So okay. it was actually kind of a technical difficulty that led us to not having audio.
So what happens? I mean, this is that was a 24-hour right. contest, right?
Yeah.
So what happens at that point when you guys come? Because that's a pretty big, like, technical glitch yeah. right there. And, like, you
and those get are not uncommon right. in these contests,
right.
you know?
You get to that point where yeah. you're watching that clock tick down.
Right.
And you come into a speed bump like that mm-hmm. with something like that. I mean, you must have
think
been
quick, make decisions, and adjust.
Pulling yeah. your fucking hair out.
Well, luckily for Meeting Misfortune, it just wound up that we didn't need the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
The story was told visually.
Right,
and
right.
Actually, probably better without the dialogue.
I think I can't even see it with dialogue
right.
on it.
And there wasn't too much dialogue, but – and, you know, the film does have some sound in it.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple scenes where we use some of the sound from the
– at the birthday party
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, from the digital SLR camera. And
well, it integrated really well. I mean, you couldn't
– yeah, and, you know, music does such great things for mm-hmm. the films. Like, it's amazing to work on these projects and see the difference between – what it feels like when you're making it versus mm-hmm. what the original or the final product is. Because
right.
it's amazing movie magic that occurs between the point of filming and then the process of editing and adding music.
Movie magic, huh?
It's movie magic, and it's unbelievable and amazing. And let me just tell the listeners, if anyone decides to take on one of these projects, if you – are not totally convinced during the filming of your film that it's mm-hmm. going to be okay, just remember the power of movie magic, because once you edit and put music into it, it's like a completely different thing. It's like amazing how good it can turn out
yeah.
versus
yeah.
what it seems to be when you're in the middle of filming it. It's like the reality of the set and everyone that's around is completely different than what you choose to show people just in through the lens of the camera
right,
and the
right.
music that
and
you
that
put
small
to it.
Little square.
Yep, in that square, that's right. where the magic happens.
Well, and it's you know, it's always different with the when the artist is kind of looking at their own piece of work. They're
right.
never going to be absolutely happy with it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be a painter, a filmmaker, a musician, I think, you know, I know from the musician standpoint, you're never happy with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're
you hear
your own
voice
worst
and you're like,
critic. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But,
which just like in Never Been Used, the mm-hmm. film we just did last month.
Yeah.
I was the lead actor in it, and I felt that I was not doing well, and I was afraid to see the footage after we were done. I did
yeah.
not want to see yeah. myself, because I thought I was just going to be, you know, repulsed by my performance. I did not think it was going well.
Uh-huh.
And then I wound up winning the award for best leading actor.
I thought that was great, man. I was like, I know that guy. That's awesome.
And
so why don't you tell us a little bit about Never Been Used. What's the premise behind it? If you don't give too much away, because
right.
we want people to go and check it out.
I should explain
themselves.
That in these contests, you're given some requirements.
Right. Okay.
So
yeah.
for that contest, for the 24-hour contest, we're given a theme. So your film must be based on the theme somehow, and then you have a prop you've got to include,
mm-hmm.
and that just helps prove that you made the film within the given time period and you didn't start early. So the theme was used, and the idea with Never Been Used is this guy who's basically OCD, so once something is used, he doesn't want to use it again.
Right.
So he's
right.
just kind of, you know, lives a disposable life, you could say, with mm-hmm. you know, multiple toothbrushes and
so not green.
Not green so at not all. Green. No. Yeah. Small toothpaste. Like, everything's travel size because he doesn't need the full portion of anything, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. So he meets a guy or a girl.
A girl,
a
yeah.
guy
yeah.
or a girl in this case.
But it was a very homosexually themed episode here.
Right. Yeah. So it could have been either way. But he meets he meets a girl in this film that he just really likes, and that just he doesn't want to show his weakness or his compulsion, so he tries mm-hmm. to hide it, and then he's just sort of forced with a turning point, you could say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's great, Jeremy. Where can we? We're gonna wrap up the show here. Where can we find these videos right now? I know that we're planning on posting at least one of those videos on our website, so you can find them there at the blog
right.
page at air-raid.net at the podcast homepage.
Mm-hmm.
But where can they find this? Find the rest of them.
Well, for Never Been Used, let's point listeners at the website you just mentioned, and then for some of the other projects that I, you know, was a part of last year with my friend June, you can go to vimeo.com, which okay. is vimeo.com.
Right, right.
And search for June Chang. And June is J-O-O-N, and Chang is C-H-A-N-G. And all of his videos can come up, and you'll see Meeting Miss Fortune, The Belgian Pretzel, and another film that I acted in called Fixing Harvey, which is one of my favorites, so I recommend uh-huh. you check that one out, too.
I'll have to and look then, at that one, too, yeah.
He's
yeah.
definitely got some other ones. He's got about 9 up there right now. So.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And then the 48hourfilmproject.com.
Right.
Right, and then there's, what was it, filmracing.com?
Yeah, for the contest, for information and other videos that you can see, the 24-hour contest is at filmracing.com. And the 48-hour is 48hourfilm.com. So I definitely recommend anyone check those out if they're interested, because it doesn't take much to get started. None of us had any experience before we did these, you know, a year ago. And now we've got quite a few under our belt, and it's been a great time making them.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much, Jeremy Kavner, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Aaron.
I hope you come back.
Oh, I will.
Yeah. Next time you guys do one of these film races or any type of film,
mm-hmm.
anything.
We can put more links on your website. And
yeah, totally. We want to know about
give you
it.
Stories and the dirty secrets of what goes on.
Yeah, and we'll push your wares.
Awesome.
We will push your wares on this podcast.
Awesome.
Okay, well, thanks for tuning in this episode, everybody. We really appreciate it. I appreciate all the feedback that we're getting on Facebook and Twitter, even though the website's not even up yet. That's great. It's awesome. So remember, you can find the show on Facebook. You can find the show on Twitter. You can email me at aaron@airraid.net, air-raid.net. And you can download us on iTunes and Zune Marketplace. So thanks a lot for coming by. We're going to go out today with Automatic Stop by The Strokes. All right, you guys, have a great week.